Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution, made possible, as always, by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Here's a profitable way to spend an hour. Watch our InvestTalk webinar. This one is a wealth workshop. It covers more practical money matters that impact everyone's life, like wills, trusts, life insurance, 529 or Coverdale College savings plans, IRAs, 401ks, brokerage accounts, annuities, Social Security, retirement, pension income, how to position aggressive and conservative portfolios. Yes, it covers it all. To see this webinar, just sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider, and you can have access to it anytime. It's free to join on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of Invest Talk. It is May 27, 2016, and of course, this show is for the average investor who wants to become above average. That's what we hope we do. So another week this week, but this time, another wild week, I should say, but this time it was mostly up instead of down. We had like 3 or 4 weeks down for the market, but this week we had an up week. And really what this demonstrates is we're going to have a volatile year. And we mentioned this, I mentioned this in our annual letter that went out in January to our clients, and I said so on the air back then, that this 2016 is going to be volatile, up and down. And I mentioned, and this, I started off this week's newsletter, premium newsletter, off with that statement, that it's going to be volatile, it's going to continue to be volatile. And we, you know, we send out our premium newsletter every Friday. It costs $10 a month to get it every Friday. So in the top section of it, I summarize the economic numbers released out this week. We had some good housing numbers, not so good durable goods report. Even though the top line number was up 3%, and that looked like, wow, that was pretty good, up 3%. But then when you took out airplanes and cars and went to the core goods, it was down 0.8%, the sales of durable goods. Remember what durable goods are. Those items that are expensive, that last 3 years or longer, are called a durable good. And that's like washer, dryer, cars, airplanes, those, you know, big things. In the last paragraph of the of our premium newsletter, I talk about stock ideas. I gave you two stock ideas today, two of them. I usually give you two a week. These are big names you all would recognize. And in the portfolio management section, I talked about different ways to look at profitabilities of companies. How do they be profitable? What should you look at? What are some of the statistics that you should pay attention to? And that was our premium newsletter, went out today. So if you're interested, you can go to investtalk.com and you can order it. You don't have to order a year at a time or anything. You can do it 1 month if you want. Okay, let's get to the show. Please bring your questions or comments to me. Before we go any further, let's check out the 24-hour listener line for somebody who called in and asked a question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
This is Adam Thomas again from Fort Wayne. And again, I love your show, but I was hoping you would expound a little bit on the importance of the junk bond market and its importance to the broader market, and specifically what defines a junk bond. I hear on the show that it mentioned always what the junk bonds are doing. I just don't quite understand how it ties into the greater market. Thank you.
Okay, well, junk bonds versus investment grade bonds, and it's kind of funny because we're going to have a little quiz on that question later on in the show. But junk bonds versus investment grade bonds, and I was just telling my nephew that the term junk is kind of a misnomer. It was coined a few decades, two or three decades ago, and it's just bonds that are rated less strong than other bonds, and the rating agencies have decided that these bonds are not investment grade. They're below investment grade. That's how they define it, and they have ratings B, triple B, A's, you know, and it's usually triple B plus or triple B are less graded, and those are junk bonds. And how do bonds affect our economy? How do junk bonds affect our economy? Well, kind of look at it this way. Bonds are help companies operate. Okay? corporations issue bonds, municipalities, counties, cities, governments, they all issue bonds. And so it helps our economy flow because it brings in money. They take that money from the bond and they do something with it. For in the case of a city or state or federal government, maybe they build roads, which makes the economy grow. Maybe they buy airplanes with it, you know, for the military. Maybe whatever they do, the government spends that money and that produces economic activity. Well, so does corporations. Now, let's say you're a company and you're having a hard time and the banks don't want to lend you money anymore, or they cost so much, you decided I'll issue bonds, I'll pay less for that so I can grow my company and get us back on the right track to build that new factory I need to build to stay competitive. So what a bond does, and both high quality and low quality bonds, is offer liquidity in the economy so it can grow. You take away junk bonds, then there's a whole slew of companies that can't borrow money, and therefore they can't expand their company, at least in theory. Okay, this is in theory. And it actually does work in practicality out there, but you're taking away a certain way to fund their operations if you took away junk. Well, junk means that they have to pay more for it because it's a higher risk. That's all that means. So it does help grease the skids of the economy. That's what it's for. That's its purpose. Okay? Okay, let's take a text question that came in. Hi, Steve. Great show. Just had a quick question. What is your take on KMI, Kinder Morgan? Thanks. And this is from Venkata. KMI, Kinder Morgan Corporation. They are a provider of natural gas transportation storage services in North America, okay? They are a pipeline company, natural gas transportation and storage, pipeline and storage of natural gas. And these companies all been taking it on the chin because of the low prices over the last year or two, and every one of these companies got killed. So now the question is, it a good time to buy now? They all bought them. Most of them bought them right at the beginning of the year. Remember, we had the worst January in history this last January for the market. And they also bought them in January. And so now they've been moving pretty much sideways. Well, let's look at the numbers. Okay, well, in 2015, they made 75 cents per share. This year, they're going to make 70 cents a share, and that's an estimate. We don't know what it is, but that's what the estimate is. Next year, 79 cents a share. So what is 70? We always look forward when you're looking at a company. So what is 79 cents a share worth? Now, the company is selling for $17.85 a share, and they're going to make 79 cents. Well, what is that? On a P.E. price to earnings ratio, what is that? Well, that's close to, what, 23, 24? And the average S&P 500 ratio right now is 18. And the long-term average of the S&P 500 average is 15. Sales have been falling quarter after quarter after quarter. So the question you have to ask yourself, is natural gas prices going to rise? Because if they do, then Kinder Morgan will do fine because they can raise their prices too. Have they hit a bottom and will they rise? Well, I can tell you for a fact that there's a glut here in the United States of natural gas and oil. I don't think they're going to rise very much. They're paying a 2.8% dividend. They have 14% owned by management, 31% owned by mutual funds. They have a decent cash flow of $1.80, but the return on equity is only 5%. That's pretty darn low. Remember, I'd like to see in the teens, return equities in the teens. For me, I wouldn't buy this company. I'm not interested at all in this company. It doesn't make enough money. Its growth is too slow or none at all. And natural gas is plentiful. So until you see a shortage of it, do you really want to buy these kinds of companies? Now, it probably will pay its 2.8% dividend with no problem. So if you're buying it for the dividend, that would be fine. But 2.8 is pretty low. I can find a better, stronger company to pay more than that. So KMI is not for me, Kinder Morgan Corporation. ETFs, big advantage. Can the big advantage of ETF be a disadvantage? That's going to be our main talking point today. Also, who needs the Fed? Do we really need the Federal Reserve? Excuse me. Do we really need it? Can we get rid of it? What would happen if we did get rid of it? How about this one? Things rich people do with their money that you should do. Things that rich people do that you should do. We're going to talk about that later on today. And I'm going to give you four dividend stocks to ride out the summer volatility. Now, these are not going to be recommended stocks. I am referring to an article. As you know, I cannot recommend buys or sells over the air as a money manager. That's not possible, but I can talk about an article who wrote this article and pointed out four of these companies. So those are what we're going to discuss today. Of course, you're going to come first. Anything you want to talk about will go first. So I'm glad you could spend the time with me today. Sometimes your home just doesn't meet your needs anymore, and you find yourself asking, should I move? Or can I remodel and make my home functional again? Why not pose your question to our own in-house realtor, Justin Klein? You can send him a note. Click on Contact Justin at InvestTalk.com. This is Invest Talk. We're here for you. For your questions, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve, I wanted to get your take on Seaboard Foods, SEB. Thanks.
Corporation, everybody. They're out of Shawnee, Mission, Kansas. Engaged in pork production, ocean transportation, commodity merchandising, sugar production, and power generation. Boy, that's kind of odd. Power generation, pork production. I mean, the power generation just doesn't seem to fit in the other things they do. So if that'd be the first thing I want to know is what portion of this company's earnings and sales are derived from the food part and dealing with food versus power, because it's very different. Those are two very different industries, and you want to kind of know what's going on there. And every time I see a company like this that has a striking difference in their business model, it always brings a question in my mind. How can you be an expert in both those? Why are you in both those? Is there some kind? It doesn't mean you never invest in them. It just means you should need, that brings up the question of how can you be good at both of those? And most of the time, they're not good at both of those. So I like the food part of this. I'm not so sure about the power generation. I'd want to find out how much of it. Is it 10% of their business? It's a $3.6 billion company. So it's a mid-cap stock. Sales have been falling. Now, if you notice over the recent weeks and months, people have been calling up and I keep saying, sales have been falling. That's because for the last four quarters, one full year, every quarter sales have been falling for the S&P 500 in general. Every quarter. So all I'm doing is when you ask about a company, it reflects the sales of those companies falling because it's for the whole darn stock market. Every stock of a publicly traded company, almost every one of them, sales have been falling. More generally speaking. Now, is it worth what it's trading at? It's a $3,125 stock, and they're going to make $143.44. So what kind of PE is that? Well, that looks like about a 20 PE, 21 PE, and I don't think it's not, I can tell you this, it's not for me. Even though I do like the commodity part of it, because I think the commodities have been beaten up recent years, and it looks like a good time to start to get into them because they're cheap. But you got to, you know, cheap means in relationship to the earnings and growth of earnings, and you need to see some turnaround. Now, I do see that the sales are slowing down less, and they were finally able to eke out an increase in their earnings per share year over year. So, you know, maybe they're turning around. You got a lot of work to do on this one before I can really come up with a yay or nay. I do like the commodity part. This is Invest Talk. How can you determine what you're really paying in fees in your employer's 401k? How can you determine that? Give me a call. We'll talk about it. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's go talk to Don in Walnut Creek. Hi, Don. How you doing?
Exceptionally well, but I'll get better. That's good. I've been looking at the bonds, playing with them, and checking them out. I came across EMC. EMC is about to be purchased by, or is in the process of being purchased by Dell. It's about to close.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed with that information that the par on it would be $100.
Right.
But it's like 93 or something like that. It's a AA bond. When a company is purchased, they would also purchase that debt. And I assume at that time the bonds would be called. Is that a correct statement?
That's not a correct assumption, no.
Okay.
No, the bond still exists just as it is, just that the new company has taken that bond onto their balance sheets, and now instead of being an ESC, it still is an EMC bond, but now it's backed by Dell/EMC. So the bond, everything, all their terms are exactly the same. If you have it at 94 and par is 100, that means you have a 6% discount to the par price. So you're going to make that up when it matures.
Okay.
What's your year? Thanks for the call, George. Appreciate it. Everybody, bonds are a little bit different. You know, you got to understand what par is. You got to understand what yield to maturity is. You got to understand different things. And we just a few minutes ago talked about quality of bonds. And I would say that's a pretty decent sounding bond to me. You're getting a 6%. You're going to get a 6% return when it goes to maturity already, just because it's going to go up in value and get your money back at par, plus whatever yield he's getting paid along the way. I think that's pretty good. And as long as it's not a 30-year bond, which I doubt that it is, it's probably only a few years left, then that sounds pretty good. Let's go to George in San Bruno. How you doing, George? Wants to talk about Starbucks.
Yeah, here's a question for you. I've been watching Starbucks for a little while now, and I'm thinking it's a good time to maybe jumping for a little while, more in the long term versus short term. But I've been doing a comparison with Chalope, their stock, which is at 450 or somewhere out there, versus this one around the 55 range. And I'm thinking, how in the heck can Chalope be at that price versus Starbucks, which has better margins and seems a little bit busier than Chipotle, you know, with burritos and stuff.
Well, are you talking about Chipotle's? They're two different, very different companies. Chipotle is a food, you know, fast food place, where Starbucks is a coffee provider. And each company is based on really their growth rate. And Chipotle had problems. Remember, they had some problems with some poison burritos out there. Remember that?
So E. coli or something.
Yeah. So that scared the bejesus out of everybody. And so they don't want to own a company that sells poison burritos, and that got, you know, it really got hit. Starbucks has been growing year after year after year for many years, high profit margins, and it's very expensive compared to its earnings. I mean, Starbucks has 23,000 coffee shops, 15,000 of them in the U.S. So Chipotle doesn't have that kind of numbers. You know, they don't have that kind of growth consistently over years and years. Chipotle had very high growth, and then they stumbled. So as far as the stock price, you're quoting $55 versus $4. The stock price has nothing to do with the value of the company. It all goes back. All goes back to earnings. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. So what do you think about Starbucks in general, then?
I like Starbucks as a company. They are geniuses to make people pay $5 or more for a cup of coffee. It should cost you a buck. So they convince you that they make some super-duper fancy coffee, and you can enjoy a nice atmosphere while you're drinking it. And, boy, those people are marketing geniuses. That's what you want to turn off your radio. That you're getting feedback on your radio. Now, the question is how much is it really worth? How much is the company worth? It's still growing 9 to 15%, 15 to 20% on their earnings, 9 to 15 on sales, but it's also selling at a 33 PE, price earnings ratio, which is pretty darn high. They're only going to make $2.19 next year. but that's 20% growth, but they're going to make $2.19. Even if you give it a 20 PE, that's a $40 stock. At a 20 PE, and the stock is selling for 55. Even though it's fallen off its high, I mean, the price was 60, close to 64, now it's 55. So it looks like it's come down. It might be a bargain, but as far as value, it's not a bargain. As far as a chart, it looks like it might bounce up from where it is because it hit this before and bounced up. So it might bounce up again back to its highs in the, you know, low 60s, but it's still very overpriced. George, it's an expensive stock. Starbucks. SBUX is the symbol, everybody. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. If you'd like to schedule a portfolio checkup with me, we're scheduling some one-to-one visits on Skype or telephone for May 31st. To get on the schedule, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
Got a question for Steve or Justin?
I'm wondering what out there is going to work better over the next 20 years than buy and hold.
You're the best person to ask it at 888-99-CHART. We thank you for subscribing to our podcast, and remember, no matter where you live in the United States, you can have your retirement portfolio reviewed by a registered investment advisor at no cost. Steve does a few of these each month on Skype or telephone. To schedule your time with Steve, just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com and then Portfolio Review. We continue now with the Friday, May 27th Invest Talk. Lots of money topics on the table. You may want to know more about how to choose a broker or why dividends are so important. Ask Steve directly, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Charlie from Long Beach, and I was wondering what your opinion of British Petroleum is, BP, and what you think the value is, and do you believe that the dividend is sustainable? Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Answer the last question first. Is the dividend sustainable? Yeah, I think they will be able to keep it up. They have a very strong cash flow of almost $7 a share. And at $32, and they're paying a 7% dividend, well, 7% of $32 is like $21, $22, and they have a $7 cash flow. So sure, they'll be able to maintain it. Now, the problem you have with all the big oil companies is the oil prices fell sharply, so their profits took it in the shorts, and their sales really fell. And a problem with a big oil company, you have to look at sales falling, but what with the volume? Did the volume fall? In other words, the volume of gas and oil that they sold, did that fall? Or was it just because the price fell, and that means that looks like the sales fell? So you got to separate those two things. And we know that oil per barrel bottomed about $26 a barrel in January. And now it's recently been trading at the high 40s. And I do believe we might even see $60 by the end of the year. That's very possible. By next year, I'm pretty sure we'll see $60 a barrel. But the question is when do you buy these oil companies? Now, you know, I said on the radio, I was buying ExxonMobil and Chevron in January. Okay, and I sold Chevron 2 weeks ago. Okay, why? Because they ran up. British Petroleum really didn't run up in price. Why didn't it? It's kind of floundering around. And I have a feeling that's the overhang from that big oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico a number of years ago. Remember that? They still have lots of billion-dollar lawsuits against them. They settled much of the lawsuits from the various agencies and governments that sued them, but there's still a lot of overhang problems they have, and that might be retarding their recovery from this oil price falling to the mid-20s or $26 a barrel. Now it's at 49. Now I'm a little concerned, as 49, that oil prices are going to come down. I mean, I don't think they'll go back to 26, but it just seems like we have more oil than we need everywhere around the United States and in the world. And it's going to be hard-pressed to support that kind of price unless the economy, not only in the United States, but around the world, picks up. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't think British Petroleum would be one I would not want to buy. I would not buy it, despite the high dividend. I still wouldn't buy it. It's pretty high price. They're going to make $1.21 this year and $2.63 next year. At $2.63, the price looks pretty attractive. But how are they going to make that $2.63? How are they going to increase their earnings 117% when sales are falling still? I'd have to look into that. That doesn't seem right to me. British Petroleum, BP, everybody. Okay, our talking point, or our main talking point today is about ETFs. Can the secret of success of the ETFs be detrimental? Yes, it can. ETFs, exchange-traded funds, they become very, very popular. There's a few thousand of them out now. There, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, there were a few hundred. Now there's thousands. So they've been very, very successful, and they've been taking away a lot of the cash away from mutual funds and into exchange-traded funds. One of the reasons is because they're so easy to buy and sell, because you can trade them on the market during the day. A mutual fund, you can only buy once, and that's at the end of the day's price, and that's it. So ETFs are much more liquid because you can buy and sell them in the day like a stock anytime you want. And therein lies the danger. Because people will buy and sell them intraday, and they'll trade them like they're stocks. They'll get, they're ETFs, they're something you buy and hold. And the industry has made sure that they advertise to you to trade them. They want you to trade them during the day. They like it because they make more money off of you. But they really should not, you know, this is the danger of the ETFs. It's too liquid, too easy to get in, too easy to get out, and it makes people lose money because they keep trying to time the market in and out, in and out. There's your danger of exchange-traded funds. Remember, an ETF is a grouping of, tracks an index, or a grouping of a sector of funds, or now you can buy commodities, you can buy currencies, you can buy precious metals. You can almost buy anything in the market. And you would think that that was good. I like the variety of offers. I think it's good in general. But how many people do you think are trading currency ETFs that have no idea what they're doing? A lot. Because it's so easy. And they think it's going to be easy. Oh, I'll buy this and bet that the dollar's going to go up or down. It's not that easy, people. If it was easy, a lot more people would do it. I can't even do it. Currency trading to me is, I can't do currency trading. I'm not versed enough in that area. So you got to be really, really careful when you're buying your ETFs and understand what your goals are, and they should always be kind of on the long-term side. Long-term. When you become an InvestTalk Insider, you'll have access to a storehouse of information, including a library of recorded webinars on a number of important money topics. You know, Justin and I have done a number of webinars over the years, and they're all there. If you're an InvestTalk Insider, you can listen to them anytime you want. You can sign up for free on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab.
The change can occur without even knowing it. This change may increase or decrease the risk in your portfolio. That's why it's a good idea to check and rebalance your portfolio regularly. Need help with that? You can meet with Steve via Skype or telephone on May 31st. He's setting aside time on that day. He can only meet with a limited number of our listeners, so if you'd like to be one of them, schedule your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Hi, I'm calling from Massachusetts, and I listen to your show on podcast. Love your show. And I'd like to know your thoughts today on Intuitive Surgical. The symbol would be ISRG and where it might be trading a year from now. Thank you. Take care.
Intuitive Surgical, everybody, it's been a popular stock over the years. Develops advanced surgical systems designed to improve open surgery and minimal invasive surgery. So I think they're the one with the Michelangelo system where the machine cuts you open and operates all by itself, and the doctor kind of just guides things from outside. Anyways, they're going to make $20.63 a share this year. That's 7% more than last year. And then $23.25 a share next year. 13% increase. Sales are increasing about 12%, 7 to 12%, yeah, maybe 10% on average or so. And therefore, and it's been doing that for years. It's a $24 billion company. $24 billion, so it's a big cap company. And at $23.25 a share and its stock price is $636, that is about a 30 PE. So if you want to pay big bucks for a stock, now I'm not talking about the price $636, I'm talking about big bucks compared to its earnings, this is the kind of company you want to buy. Now, why is it selling so high of a PE? Because it's been growing so steadily year after year after year, so investors like that. But the first time it stumbles, the first time it does, let's say one of their machines, you know, accidentally cuts the wrong artery and kills a couple people on the operating table. The first time that something like that happens, the stock would crash. So I'm not too keen on the stock. ISRG, I just think it's too expensive. If it ever got cheap, I kind of like what they do. Now, what would be cheap? Well, if it ever dropped below $500 a share with these numbers, I'd be interested because that would give me a 15 to 20% discount from current price. And it's really shot up recently. Do not chase performance. Do not chase it. Have you ever noticed when you buy a stock, it goes down? If you've ever noticed that every time that you buy a stock, it goes down, that tells me you're chasing performance because you heard it and you saw it is doing so well, and then you jump in. When you sell a stock, when you buy a stock, someone else is selling it to you. That person who's selling it to you is selling it for a reason too, just like you're buying it for a reason. He thinks or she thinks it's going to go down, or else he wouldn't sell it. You think it's going to go up. For every buyer, there's a seller, and every seller, there's a buyer. So are you smarter than the person that's selling you the stock, or is that guy or girl smarter than you? See, always try to be humble here. You're competing with other people. Are they smarter than you? I wouldn't buy this stock because it's too expensive. It's as simple as that. I don't like to overpay for stocks. But it's a great company. It really is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Who needs the Fed? Do we really need the Federal Reserve? What do? They raise and lower interest rates? Well, they only raise and lower interest rates to the banks that they loan money to. But do we need them to do that? Why can't we let the interest rates just float to where, let the market take care of that? Whatever the interest rate should be, whatever the market-driven rate should be. Okay, are you worried that maybe they mint money and, you know, well, the mint mints money, but they're the ones that request it. Well, why can't the U.S. Treasury Secretary do it? They used to do it before the Fed was around. Why can't they do it? And why don't we grow the money, which is what the Fed does too, grows the money. Why don't we grow based on the GDP growth? Do we really need the Fed? Is the Fed helping? Well, has it? Remember, the Federal Reserve was set up in 1900s. I don't remember the day. We still had a great recession. We still have big recessions along the way. They're supposed to try to keep full employment and not have inflation. We've had big inflation before. Just generally speaking, how's our track record been? Do we really need them? And I'm just asking a question. I don't know if I have the answer to that because I don't know if I'm smart enough. But it seems to me that they're doing such a great job over the decades. That seems to me. We want to make the most of the money you've already earned and get it working for you harder. You don't want to work for money. You want the money work for you. This is something that I learned years ago when I was working my tushy off trying to make a living and say, you know, there's got to be a better way. Have the money work for you. You don't work for it. That's hard to do because you got to get to a point where that happens. And that's hard to get there. So, but that is the goal. You want financial independence. Doesn't everybody want to be financially independent? I think so. And you want to retire comfortably at some point. If I don't think you should ever retire, but that's, you know, sometimes you have to. So let's work together on getting to that choice. A freedom of choice is what you want. Check in now at 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk.
A quick reminder, if there's a term that you hear mentioned on the program but you're unclear about what it means or you have a question about it, we want you to ask. It's very likely that you're not the only one with that same question. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Jack from Minneapolis, a podcast listener. Thank you for what you do for us. I have a question about GGN, George Nancy. What do you think of that as a long-term play? Thank you so much. Bye.
Okay, GGN is a closed-end fund. Do you know what that means? Closed-end fund investing in equity securities and companies engaged in gold and natural resource industries. Okay. Their biggest claim to fame is their dividend, 13%. And how they do that by playing the options market. And they do a pretty good job on it. And they do the options in precious metal, natural resources. The reason why I know this stock pretty well is because a couple years ago we owned it. And I really enjoyed that dividend for several times. But then it started to go down. And I decided, you know, 13% is great, but not if the stock goes down 20%. You're not making any money. I do like the company. It's done very, very well off coming from a bottom in January. And now it's coming off that high. It's a $6.17 stock. It was $7. And it's one of those stocks that it's kind of odd because it doesn't produce anything. It doesn't make anything. It's a closed-end fund that trades, basically, in futures, options. Now, what is a closed-end fund? Think of an ETF. An ETF is an open-end fund, even though no one describes it as an open-end fund. It is. What that means is the more people that buy an ETF, the more shares are issued. In a closed-end fund, it's a finite number of shares. There's only so many shares in the float. In this case, it's 112 million shares. No more, no less. So that the assets it has can sell at a discount or a premium to the holdings. It could be worth more or less than the actual holdings. You always want to buy a closed-end fund when it's at a discount. And I can't tell you if it's at a discount or not, but I would definitely take a look at that. I'm a little worried because earnings have been going down on this company for 2 years. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. If you still have a question, we still have time. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART. $8.99 chart. Let's talk to John in San Francisco. How you doing, John?
I'm okay, thank you. I love your show.
Thank you.
Could you tell me about Tiffany, TIF? Is it a good stock?
It is a good company, yes. Tiffany Corporation, $7.8 billion company, selling for $62.54. They had recent sales that were very disappointing, and the stock took a pretty good dive on it. But they're going to make $3.66 a share this year, down from $3.83 last year, and bounce up to $4.01 next year. And as a $62 stock, that is not a bad price. Okay, that's like a 15 PE, which is market. The problem is their sales have weakened, and that really is the concern. On a chart, this is a pretty good price. Right where it is, because it's been down here before and it's bounced. So it may be ready for another bounce at this price. And the five-year PE average is 14 to 27. And so it's not overpriced. It's fairly priced or a little underpriced. So, yeah, I could see myself wanting this stock. I, however, John, might wait till the closer to the fall, because these kinds of stocks, everybody knows who Tiffany is, you know, the stores, you know, the fancy, very expensive jewelry, right? These kind of stocks tend to do better in the fall when approaching the holiday season. I would probably hold off buying until that happens myself. John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to George in San Jose. How you doing, George?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for the call.
Hi. I've been watching SNH, Senior Housing REIT.
Yep, one of the ones I like.
I watched it go down to like 12, 13, and now it's going back up. It's around 18. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you think it's a good time to get into it for a long-term buy.
I like senior housing properties. It's a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust. Everybody knows what that is, a real estate investment trust, that owns and acquires and leases senior housing properties in, 38 states and Washington, D.C.? A REIT, remember, all the money they make, if they pay their earnings, 90% of their earnings out in the form of a dividend, they don't have to pay corporate income tax. You have to pay tax when you get a dividend, and it's paying 8.3% right now. So the question is it a good buy right now? Frankly, I think it is. It's around a 10 PE. Even though it's come off its low of $14 to $18, I mean, it would be a better buy at 14, but it still looks fairly inexpensive. And if you buy it for the long haul for that yield, 8%, George, it's hard for me to imagine that it would be a wrong thing to buy. Okay? Still growing 12 to 20% sales every quarter. It's doing quite well. I like it. SNH, thank you very much, George. Appreciate the call. Okay, how about things rich people do with money you should do too? How about number one, delayed gratification? How many people out there are delaying your gratification? How many out there are not buying a brand new car because they want one? Instead of, do you need one? You don't need one. Delayed gratification. They don't just buy everything anytime they want. The use of credit cards or credit itself strategically. In other words, they just don't borrow money. They borrow money to buy assets that they think will appreciate. They don't borrow money just to buy things with. They borrow money to buy things that they think will go up in value. They think long-term with their investments. Do you do that? Buy assets that appreciate. Don't buy things that depreciate. Spend less than you earn. Of course, rich people can do that because they're rich. But if you want to be rich, you can do that too. That's how you get to be rich. So those are things that rich people do that you could do and you probably should do. Now, I wanted to quickly say the four dividend stocks to ride throughout the summer. There's an article. You can see it. It's everywhere on the internet. And the four stocks are AT&T, ExxonMobil, Eli Lilly, and Procter & Gamble. The common theme, very big blue chip stocks that have pretty decent dividends. Our time is up. I want to tell you about our useful info sheet that could be helpful to you. 10 questions to ask when picking an agent, a real estate agent. Now, they can cost you a lot of money or they can save you a lot of money. You have instant access to this useful document when you sign up for free to be an InvestTalk Insider on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. That's your two T's. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. And maybe we can do it again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis. at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.